Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. As a perennial swing state, it's become an election year tradition that national media outlets swoop into Wisconsin to quickly gauge the hearts and minds of likely voters before whisking away their reporters to cover other stories. The practice is known as parachute journalism, and it can have some unfortunate repercussions. A recent piece in Harper's Magazine called The Art of Losing focused on the city of Kenosha and was written by someone who admitted that before spending time there, he'd never heard of Kenosha. The piece received mixed reviews, but it raised a lot of questions about parachute journalism, its merits, and how it represents Middle America to outside audiences. Logan Jaffe is an engagement reporter for ProPublica Illinois, and she's been on both sides of this issue as a local and regional reporter and as a reporter for the New York Times. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about it.
We're talking about parachute journalism, and this is a term that I think is pretty well known amongst people in the industry, but for people who are perhaps uninitiated, how would you define parachute journalism?
I think it is fairly difficult to define in terms of scale, but the essential idea is you are a reporter who is reporting on a place that you typically do not report in, and usually that means something like more modern or like frequent examples are people from either coast coming into the Midwest is kind of where this happens a lot, but you know, it happens across the country in various ways too. But kind of where these you know, larger sort of media bubbles, media hubs in cities on either coast drop in and want to write about a place.
I think there are a lot of mixed feelings about parachute journalism here. You know, there's the side of it of, well, the national media is paying attention. But there's also this idea of, well, why didn't they go to the journalists who were here, or the perspective being from someone who fundamentally doesn't understand the area that they're now covering. What are some of the pitfalls that we associate with parachute journalism?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most obvious one, which, you know, lends itself to a much larger conversation, but I think the big pitfall is, you know, the assumptions that somebody, a reporter who is not from a place, makes about a place and the idea and concept of what even is a story in that place to begin with. So I think, like, even before a journalist or a so-called parachute journalist comes into a place, even before they start writing or talking to people, they may have an assumption of what the story is that they're there to write about. And that person may have done a lot of research into a place, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that is what a story should be.
Yeah. Now, to take a step back, you have experience as a local journalist, as a journalist for the New York Times, and now again as a regional reporter. How have these experiences shaped your views on parachute journalism?
I mean, it's really easy to mess up. It's like I have, you know, when I was working at the New York Times, I was working in 360 video, and I had pitched my editor there an idea to go to this town in Virginia. It's called Lexington, Virginia. And it's a place that I had already been to and I had already done some previous reporting on. So I gave my, I was telling myself, you know, this isn't parachute journalism. Like, I've been here before. But, you know, she let me go down to this town because they were having a, they celebrate a day that honors the Confederate General Robert E. Lee. And there's this parade that was held on the same day as the MLK Day parade. So I was wanted to go do that. But we had a very limited bandwidth to be able, like, to actually produce the story in, you know? So, like, I was supposed to be making a video that was about, I don't know, no more than 2 minutes long, right? I got a lot of backlash for that story. And you know what? I think a lot of that feedback and kind of criticism that I got from people was merited in hindsight, because it was so much more of a complicated story rather than just like, this is happening and this is happening and it's happening in the small town in America and here's what it means. You just can't do that in a very short amount of the time that I had, at least. So, like, that kind of pushed me to learn more about, about like when to say no to assignments like that. And I later left the New York Times. I should add that kind of the reason ties into some of this too.
You know, you hit on something inside of that that I think is really central to this conversation. What it means. You know, we look at these events and we look at like these articles, and the recent article that kind of spurred this conversation was about Kenosha, a town that's not so far away from where I grew up, but also where I live now in Milwaukee. And I think what struck people was that in some ways it was attempting to define a city written by a guy who had been there for 6 weeks in the dead of winter. And when we're talking about these stories especially, and in the context of parachute journalism, reading them often seems to center on the experience of a kind of discovering of a place. What are the issues that come along with that?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I think the central sort of issue or the question there is discovering a place to who? And who are you to be discovering it? And getting back to the idea of what does it mean? I think the second most important part of that question perhaps is what does it mean to who? Who are you talking to? Who are you writing for? And how are you going to implicate yourself as a writer within that framework? And like the tone of, you know, finding or discovering a place, it can be kind of easy because in one sense, as a reporter, and you have not been to a place, that is kind of what you might be experiencing or feeling. And as a journalist, especially if you are able to like write in the first person perspective, and you're like, you know, writing a piece in which you are in some ways a character, it is easy to write to that idea of how you were feeling right when you got there. But I think at this point, it sort of transitions to like a crossover between like a classic sort of travelogue almost. And I think parachute journalism could be done in a way that is very much not like that, but it often resorts to that because it's actually hard to do, I think, and it comes with a lot of risks. And I don't know if you know, one could be in a place for long enough or could kind of like reconcile that feeling of being an outsider in some way before, you know, you start asking people questions or writing or assuming that this is the perspective or that your article is the one that you're there to write. You can bake that into the story in a way that also kind of transcends you from it. I don't know if that sounds too like esoteric or something, but what that means is you're risking pushing the audience that you're writing about and the communities that you're there to write about away while, you know, you are becoming a proxy for other outsiders who are reading this, you know?
This is an interesting conversation in part because, you know, most of the time when I do interviews, I don't have an opinion per se. It's not something that I would insert myself into. But, you know, journalism is my job, and so I do have perspectives on how we cover especially areas that are near and dear to my heart. And so when I'm looking at these kinds of pieces where somebody goes to a place for, you know, often a few days, in this case, a few weeks, which was, you know, better, there's always this question of, well, why not have someone write about it who's from there, who even had like a kind of passing understanding of what culture is like, in this case, in Kenosha. Why do you think we continue to have these kinds of narratives that do center the experience of an outsider, but essentially attempt to define what life is like in towns around America?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good point. And, you know, there are so many missed opportunities right now for news or journalism outlets with budgets, which, you know, most of them are on the coasts and in big cities. There's a huge missed opportunity to actually just do some research and talk to reporters and writers who live in the area, because if the point in that Kenosha piece, you know, it seemed to me the central question and the whole reason why the reporter was there is because this one county, it was a major swing county in that it voted for Obama and then voted for Trump, even though the margin was also very small in what made it a sort of swing county. And I think, yeah, reaching out to somebody who lived in that county, that would be ideal. But why isn't it happening? I can't say definitively for sure why, but I think part of it has to do with, you know, larger outlets or national organizations that have not really cared about the consequences of what people who live in small towns or, you know, suburban or rural counties think, because they don't see them as central to, you know, membership or revenue, and they're not their target audience. So the backlash doesn't always have to matter, or the consequences don't always have to matter, perhaps. And so also, I think, you know, part of what I've experienced, at least, is a lack of trust from some coastal outlets, at least, and I'm talking very generally here, which is always kind of risky, but a lack of trust that journalists who are not from this kind of more prestigious journalism background have for reporters who have chosen to stay in the Midwest and not try to flock to the coasts.
Interesting. When I think about the consequences of this kind of reporting, I think a lot of the consequences are borne out on reporters like you and myself who are working in these areas, because people see these pieces and I think they tend to lump us together sometimes. They go, well, you know, you're the media, you're part of the problem. We've been misrepresented, and now, you know, the people who face the backlash are local reporters who might also take issue with these kinds of depictions. When it comes to the conversations that I think a lot of journalists are having, what are the perceptions? What do you see as the perceptions of parachute journalism and kind of the future of reporting on areas like Kenosha, which I should say is not rural? The man says in the article, barely 100,000.
Sure. No, Kenosha's not rural. I mean, I think right now, especially with so many newsrooms, you know, even legendary newspapers in big cities, they're laying off so much staff. We're having this huge news and newspaper crisis across the country. And from what I am sensing, I think that there is a lot of conversation among journalists and reporters to kind of, out of necessity, to some extent, share more resources with each other in order to best cover an area. And I hope that that continues to keep happening. And I hope that that conversation keeps happening. And perhaps, you know, when there is kind of more of a shared network of resources, and, you know, I'm thinking about where I live in Illinois, covering Chicago to St. Louis to Carbondale and even Southeast Missouri and up towards Michigan or you know, the Midwest. I mean, many outlets are struggling with major financial challenges. So how do we better connect our regional media to each other and even try to understand what specifically we are now losing because of budgets? But hopefully, you know, when we strengthen the sort of networked journalism, maybe that would change the idea of parachute journalism, because it, in some kind of interesting way, could broaden the idea of what a place, like how, what a region is, like if it's a bit more connected to each other. I'm not saying that eventually parachute journalism is just going to stop happening or anything, but I think that there's also the perception that people, like actual people, like not journalists, I mean, journalists are actual people, sure, but that they care what the coastal elites think. And I think that most people just don't, and that's fine. Journalists, if they were reached out to by other journalists wanting to come parachute, it's not like you have to get the local journalist permission to do so, but it is in their interest to actually reach out to people who have been covering an area for a very long time, to talk through story ideas, to talk through angles, and to just like know them, because they could be helpful resources to you if they understand where you're coming from too.
Yeah. Well, Logan, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Logan Jaffe is the engagement reporter for ProPublica Illinois, and she previously worked with the New York Times and Chicago Public Media. Jaffe spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. While a lot of Wisconsin journalists weighed in on whether or not Kenosha was well represented in the Harper's piece titled The Art of Losing, there's perhaps no journalist closer to the issue than Liz Snyder. Snyder grew up on the north side of Kenosha, and she's now a columnist and reporter for Kenosha News. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the article and her city.
So, of course, we're talking about the Harper's article. What were your first impressions of it?
Well, when I first read it, I have to admit, I felt very defensive right away and a little angry because he calls Kenosha right off the bat a gray, ex-urban strip of Lake Michigan frontage with barely 100,000 residents. And I thought, you know, we like to think we're more than that. And what are we supposed to be a suburb of? An exurb? Like, are we a suburb of Chicago or Milwaukee? And that phrase, barely 100,000 residents. I don't really know what that means. Are we supposed to be over 100,000? Like, we're barely making it? Because we're actually a growing community, you know, and it's been a lot of growth lately. And I'm not sure that Kenosha cares if we get to 100,000 or not. And, you know, is that a benchmark of something? So I did feel very defensive, you know, maybe unfairly, but.
I will say, I was also struck by the barely 100,000 people.
Yeah, barely. Like I said, like it was a goal that we were trying to reach, and I didn't realize we were.
Well, that's a big city for Wisconsin. Some people, myself included, have taken issue with the reporter being kind of completely unfamiliar with the area. He hadn't heard of Kenosha. And then, you know, he essentially wrote a piece that attempted to define the area, what the area was about. What do you think of these criticisms, and how do you think that was borne out in the article itself?
Well, I told him, because I did talk to James Pogue, you know, on the phone after the article came out. And the first thing I said to him is, well, you know, you talk about it being like gray and grim and cold, but it's February, man, in the Midwest. I said, that's why we make February the shortest month and why a lot of us, if we can, we escape for a week or two, go somewhere a little sunnier. So I thought that whole weather thing was kind of funny. I think he was probably trying to set the scene, but I thought, yeah, nobody's that happy in February. But yeah, I kind of felt like he perhaps had a preconceived notion too, because he does say later in the article that he was surprised to find Kenoshans are not angry all the time, even in February, about politics, as if we have nothing else to focus on. I thought it seemed like it was a revelation to him that people in Kenosha have lives that don't revolve around what's going to happen with Donald Trump or what's going to happen nationally, that we, you know, we care about it. And I'm certain there's people who talk about it and think about it, but you don't want to spend all your time just worrying about those issues when there's other things like Packer games in February to look at. So I think that surprised him.
You mentioned, of course, you had a chance to talk to the writer. How did he explain his approach to this work?
Well, actually, when I talked to him, too, I felt like I'm a little angry. I'm feeling a little defensive, kind of like you do, like if, you know, you pick on your sibling, but then someone else says, you know, your brother's stupid. So you punch him because you're like, he's my brother. I can talk about him that way. So I think I kind of felt that way, like, hey, this is Kenosha. This is my hometown where I live now and write about for the hometown newspaper. So you can't say it. We might say it. But then once I talked to him, he was a very sweet guy and very funny and nice. So I really feel like he didn't mean any harm. And he is based in Los Angeles now, but he's actually from Hamilton County, Ohio. So we talked about that a bit too. So he's not from a big city. And he's also from an area where he said, you know, he's not happy when, like he said, you know, East or West Coast writers would come to Ohio and talk about different parts of Ohio. And he'd say, I feel like they wildly exaggerated it. So what he was trying to do is he came here and he wanted to stay 6 weeks, which he did. He rented a house for 6 weeks because he felt like if he stayed here, you know, a little more than a month, it would be better than if he just popped in for like a weekend or 3 days and then tried to sum up the area. So I feel like he was trying to make an attempt to get to know people in the community and not just do like a, you know, drive-by hit job on it. I don't know if he was successful or not, but at least it was an attempt.
Yeah, it when I read it, it immediately feels a bit alienating, in part because the approach is that of someone seemingly discovering a place that, you know, I've known my whole life. I grew up not that far from Kenosha, and I have to imagine as someone who lives and works in Kenosha, it felt much more that way. But I guess after speaking with him and after reading the piece, do you think there's merit in that approach of discovering a place, or do you think the story of Kenosha is ultimately better told by someone who is from the area?
Well, I think you're never going to get to know a place just from staying there, you know, even 6 months. I don't know if you can dig into a place's DNA in that way, because I'm sure I could go to Los Angeles for 6 weeks and I would write about my impressions of it. And even though I could say, well, I dug myself, I embedded here, but it's not going to be the same as a native person from Los Angeles is going to look at it. I think there's probably value in both. But I think it's a little glib, and it's probably a little too easy for journalists to fall into the trap of thinking, oh, I know that place. You know, I parachuted in. I went to some of the bars. I went out to eat. I went to a labor breakfast. He went to the Swedish American Club one night and, you know, played trivia. I mean, that is a little snapshot, and that is a little slice of the community. But that's not Kenosha, not any more than it would be, you know, Lake Geneva or Chicago or San Diego. Yeah, I think probably unless you do live somewhere or are from somewhere, then you really know it in your bones. And that probably just can't really be replicated anywhere.
Liz Snyder is a columnist and reporter for Kenosha News, and she spoke with Lyke Vexjoy Powers.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lyke Effect page at wuwm.com.